Welcome, everyone, to episode 315 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we have some semblance of NBA news to react to. So we're going to get into the latest on when or if the NBA season will resume. We will also touch on some financial issues the league is embracing or trying to figure out. And we will wrap up by talking about the Bulls, who are in the midst of a front office search that was long overdue. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Brian is going pretty well. I got unblocked by Vogue.
I know. Congrats.
I have no idea if, like, the really famous, like, in the millions of followers people have a three-month block option, but I think so, because it aligned with the date perfectly.
Yeah, it must have been, like, a complete auto-block or something.
Wow. I feel both honored and at the same time, like, the scum of the earth.
Because you really, it's not like you were overtly mean to him. You made an innocuous joke and then caught that block really quickly.
I made a Futurama joke, man. That was I've been one of his biggest supporters over the years. It was very, very odd. I was legitimately sad. And now, seeing, like, yesterday, I saw someone quote tweet him, and it wasn't you. And then his, because for some reason when you quote tweet him in my mentions, I could still see the tweet. But this was in the timeline. I was like, well, there's Twitter acting up again. And then someone else, and then one more. And like, huh, that's weird. And then I finally decided, okay, I'm going to click on this. And then I'll settle for the disappointment afterwards if I see that it's still blocked. Lo and behold, I wasn't. It was very odd.
Yeah. First you thought, maybe I have to get switch off of my burner. Maybe I'm on that, and that's why I can see him.
That is actually true. I totally did that, yeah.
Oh man, well, that's good. Congratulations, that is a big accomplishment. See, who said very quarantine was good for nothing?
Yeah. Woj just basically flattened the curve using me and his listening skill.
Maybe that's how he's killing time. He's like, why, let me go through all these people I blocked and figure out why I blocked them. He's giving them a reprieve.
Yeah,
well, glad to hear that. Glad to hear you're doing well. Hope everyone is staying safe out there. Let's get into, I mean, we've been doing these off-season preemptive by Felicia's, and we'll get back to them shortly, but when we have news to discuss, we're going to take advantage, because I think it's going to be few and far between.
That just takes priority.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So Adam Silver spoke with TNT's Ernie Johnson last night. They went on they did a Twitter broadcast from the NBA handle. So they talked about 30 minutes just to check in on basically where the league is in terms of restarting the season, what they're thinking. You know, we've heard reports in recent weeks about potential plans. Silver basically said it's all still up in the air. He said, at least for the month of April, we won't be in a position to make any decisions. I don't think that necessarily means that on May 1st we will be in that position, but I at least know that to just settle if you're done a bit. I mean, they're still having discussions internally with teams and with players and with locations for possible ways to restart the tournament. So it's not like they're doing what Congress is and just taking the month off. But they're at least saying May 1st, NBA is not coming back in April. We will reassess it May 1st and see what's realistic. Then we get a report from Baxter Holmes of ESPN shortly thereafter, and he said, in recent weeks, officials within the NBA and NBPA have been collaborating and assessing the viability of multiple blood testing devices for the coronavirus that could provide accurate results within a matter of minutes, which would hopefully enable the league to track the virus in what is considered a critical first step toward resuming play in the near future. Given all of that, Mort, does this raise your optimism whatsoever of the league resuming in any capacity?
Nope. No, I'm sorry. I hope to be wrong. I've said that so many times on this podcast, but like, no, look at the where the U.S. is trending from a coronavirus perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. So look, even if, let's say you do the whole bubble thing and you actually get like the entire league off to somewhere specific, like your one area, and mm-hmm. like you seal it off or whatever. Like, even if one person has been misdiagnosed, or you know, by saying, oh, you're safe, and that player may not have been, or a team executive or whatever, just mm-hmm. one person falls through the crack, boom, game over.
Yeah,
it's just such a delicate process that I have no optimism this is succeeding. I will say this though, I commend the NBA.
Yeah.
I truly and utterly commend the NBA for keeping this dream alive and trying their best in trying to get the best out of a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is just this is them backed into a corner and they are trying everything that they have at their disposal, and I respect the living hell out of that. So good on you, NBA, for doing that. But just me personally, I'm skeptical. I'm very, very skeptical. Here in Denmark, we have begun flattening the curve. And mm-hmm. Our prime minister has actually decided, well, here from April 15th, we are actually going to gradually reopen the country. And there's a lot of pushback on that. There's a lot of people going, well, you know what? Even though it's trending in the right direction, that could actually reverse itself really, really quickly. Like, let's not get overconfident.
Mm-hmm.
So even with that, and let's just be absolutely clear, your curve is not trending the right way.
No. I mean, there's in some areas of the country, like California is doing great.
Right.
And even New York in recent days has shown some promising signs, although the news is like heartbreaking right now. I mean, like morgues are full, they're getting refrigerated trucks, they're talking about digging mass graves in parks. Like, we're not we are definitely nowhere near a return to normalcy.
That's my point. I worded it improperly, but you know what I mean. You have a longer period, I want to say, to go through before you're in the clear. And like, even here in a much smaller country, like, people are still that's potentially bad news in reopening the country. So I think this is going to be a long process, and I hope to be wrong. And I would welcome Adam Silver to come on this podcast and basically call me an idiot for 25 straight minutes. Just, that would be wonderful. I would welcome that. That would be fantastic. But I just think it's such an uphill battle, right? Everything just has to be aligned. Everything. Like, you still can't have fans, so it'd still be closed off. And you heard a bunch of NBA players, including LeBron, saying, I'll never play for, an empty crowd. Like, okay, so what about that? That needs to be figured out as well.
Yeah, I want to go back to that, because I think that's going to be an issue. We could talk about that when we hit the financial part. I mean, I thought an interesting excerpt from this Baxter Holmes article, and this has been coming up basically every time someone discusses a possible restart to play. One general manager said, the thing that most people are worried about right now is the inevitability, not even likelihood, the absolute inevitability of a false negative.
Yeah.
Or an athletic training official said, what if a player or staffer has a low viral load after being infected for only a few days, and that doesn't register on a test? So then, they said the terrible situation would be if that person just got infected, he's carrying, he's not showing, you do the test that says negative, then you have him among everyone else, thinking he's healthy, but he's not. And I wish my wife, Alex, is finishing up her last 30-hour ICU shift right now, so I wish she were here to explain this to me, or explain this to everyone better than I can. Long story short is that none of these tests are 100% accurate. She explained there's a difference between sensitivity and specificity. I'm not even going to try to explain it, because she is much smarter than me in that regard. But the long story short is, like, there is no guarantee that even though you tested negative, you don't actually have the virus. So even with all of these possible solutions, yes, I think that is one of the biggest obstacles to return is, can we be 100% confident? I mean, I think ultimately you're going to have to quarantine everyone for 2 weeks before you even start, test them multiple times. And then that raises the question of, okay, well, you know, despite what our president says, testing still isn't available to everyone or like widespread enough that everyone who's suspected of having coronavirus is getting tested right now. And we're in early April. So a month from now, maybe that won't be the case. Like I pray to God that won't be the case. And I hope their tests are available to anyone who needs it, because then we can start getting a more accurate picture. But until then, I don't know how the NBA or MLB or any of these other leagues that is discussing resuming play, I don't know how these leagues can justify, okay, we're going to need 5 tests per player, or we're just going to hoard them while people who are sick and need to be hospitalized are not getting tested because we don't have the resources.
Right. No, that is going to be like a major PR backlash.
Right.
And which one they can't afford, to be honest. Like right now they're bleeding money.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a problem moving forward as well. And here's another perspective on this that I haven't seen being presented anywhere. Like we have seen numerous examples now of, you know, younger people also passing away, unfortunately, because of the coronavirus.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we as a community are looking at NBA players and we're, you know, looking at them as superheroes, basically like, oh, you're in like perfect condition in that way. You're, like, physically, you're at the apex, so you're good to go. And yes, absolutely. Like the risk is lower with the vast majority of NBA players because of just how insanely in shape they all are. But that doesn't mean that they're invulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
One person just caught in the wrong way could absolutely pass away from this. And if one NBA player, just one NBA player passes away from this, all like everything boils over.
Yeah. Yeah. Low risk doesn't mean no risk.
Correct.
Like the percentages are the percentages for a reason. And I've had to have, my wife has had that talk with me many times in the past few weeks as I'm like, you know, stressed out about her and our friends who are around this thing every day. Just like, you know, you can't just listen to one story because you could do that with any single illness and, you know, the same, like there are bad worst case scenarios for everything. So the percentages are the percentages for a reason. But as you said, I mean, you know, if we're talking about 450 people and in the NBA,
that's just the players.
Right. Exactly. And plus, yeah, I mean, the coaches, team staffers, many of whom are older. If they're around too, you have to protect them as well. I mean, they are in the higher risk category relative to the players. But even if we're just talking players and the fatality rate, you know, is, let's say among that age group is 0.1%. So that's 1 in 1,000. Well, there's 1 in 450 players. Are you gambling that, you know, you're going to be on the right side of that?
Right.
You know, the NBA has to be comfortable with that and players have to be comfortable with that. And I think that's going to be a big obstacle to resuming play is getting players on board with whatever the NBA comes up with.
Yeah. This is all a big process and not one as enjoyable as the actual process.
that one was also not enjoyable, as it turned out.
Well, it's to some extent.
Yeah.
Well, at least John Beilein got out in time, huh?
That's, you know, he might be the smartest one of everyone because he's now getting paid not to work.
Right.
Like everyone else is getting pay cuts and furloughs, and he's just like, nah, I'm chilling, man. My mother-in-law just did the same thing. She just retired at the end of March, and she's like going stir crazy now. And I'm like, do you know how great you have it? Like, all of these top executives are getting 20, 25% pay cuts. You're getting paid not to work for the next 2 years. That's amazing.
Yeah. No, that is great.
Yeah.
Good on the elderly.
Yes.
Who got out in time.
Yes. So let's go into the financial aspect more, because I think this is also going to inform any potential return to play. Right now, April 1st, NBA players got their full paychecks. April 15th is when they're due to be paid next.
1 week away.
Right. As of now, there are ongoing conversations about withholding more money from them. to cover any potential shortfall from if the league is forced to cancel regular season games at some point. So in the collective bargaining agreement, there's something called the force majeure clause, which is basically like, if an act of God, terrorism, war, whatever, including pandemics, if that forces the NBA to cancel games, we can take basically like 1.08% of your salary per game missed. The NBA ideally would not like to exercise that clause, because if they do, then they can also negate the entire CBA within 60 days. And they've shown no interest in doing that, so I don't think we're there. Right. But the point is, I mean, you know, as you said, the NBA is hemorrhaging money right now. We're looking at, if the regular season gets canceled, estimates are that they're going to lose about $500 million. If the playoffs get canceled as well, you know, I've seen estimates above, I think Ben Gala over the Washington Post said almost $1.2 billion. Hmm. Teams are not going to be the only ones that incur that loss. It's going to be players as well. So what they're discussing right now is withholding more of your money, putting it in an escrow account. The amount is up for debate. According to Shams Charania, it was, I think the NBA said they want to take 50% of salaries from here on out, put it in escrow. The Players Association said wait until May 15th, take 25%. So I'm guessing it ends with 50% May 1st, if we're just reaching a compromise there. Either way, players are going to have to give back a good chunk of money. Because otherwise, if we reach the point where they do cancel regular season games, they didn't withhold additional money from them, the players will have to give that money back either now or next season. They'll have that pay withheld from them if they're with the same team next season. So that's a complication that we also need to factor in, because I think, you know, we've been hearing this bubble idea, right, where it's you put every player in one city. I think Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated mentioned Las Vegas in particular. Other reporters have as well. But the logistics of that are what's really complicated, because you're going to have to quarantine, as we've said for a while now, you're going to have to quarantine everyone. You're not going to be able to, their family, their friends can't come in and out of that environment. It's really just going to have to be everyone in one place. You cannot exit or enter. You're stuck there. And then you factor in all of the other people involved with that. If you're staying in hotels, the hotel cleaning staff, they're going to have to be quarantined. The people preparing your food are going to have to be quarantined. The security staff, that, you know, everyone involved in the production of this is going to have
to be a long string.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. So I think Tom Haberstroh of NBC Sports and Dan Wolkin of USA Today both had good columns about the quarantine idea, the bubble idea recently, and basically like what logistically makes it so challenging. But more, I mean, I think one of the biggest obstacles will be getting the players on board for, you know, not seeing their family or friends for weeks, if not months at a time. Do you think the threat of withholding paychecks from them or withholding some of their salary will make them more willing to meet the NBA in the middle?
For some, probably. And then for others, no. I mean, the big superstars who have, you know, hundreds of millions in their bank accounts, mm-hmm. maybe the financial hit right now is just so insignificant in the grand scheme of their financial situation that they are just prioritizing family time and safety time and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you have some minimum salary guys or mid-range guy who's coming up on like the final year of their contracts, who may say, hey, you know what, I could actually use that. I don't know if I'm guaranteed an NBA spot next season. I don't know. So I think it depends on the player. But I think I have a solution here, Brian.
Okay, I'm ready. So is Adam Silver.
So they should all go to Montana. Montana specifically is just wide open, right?
Sure.
You give all the NBA players like their own gun, because then they can go hunt. Mm-hmm. Like, you open up some special kind of, like, you allow them to hunt. I don't know if it's outside or inside of hunting season. I'm not in that world.
Oh, yeah. No,
but you just make a stipulant over it and say, you know what, you can go hunt.
Sure.
Then they make their own damn food, Brian. There we go. Cut out the middleman. No room service. No waiters. Like, they do everything themselves. and then they play ball after they shot a bison or whatever.
And that could be a reality show in and of itself if we're looking for ways to recoup the Lost Gate expenses.
There we go. Look, don't kid around. You would tune in for that.
I watched the NBA 2K tournament the other day. Like,
oh my god! All right, that's then you're low. Then you're really low. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
It was a dark time. Well, because Alex was that was her fourth 30-hour shift. I'm like, I got nothing better to do.
That's true.
I'm here writing about the NBA probably being canceled. I guess I'll watch some. Because I thought like maybe they would trash talk. And Pat Beverly, the last matchup between Pat Beverly and Hassan Whiteside, Beverly did just run his mouth the entire time, which was great. But the other ones, yeah, they didn't talk. We needed like just pure trash talkers the entire time.
That's what I said like a month ago.
Yeah.
Like basically if they have to play games without anyone in the stands, like without fans.
Right.
Just mic them up and for one dumbass month, just allow swearing on all the national networks.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah, like
just go for it. By the way, do you think that Sion would even use his gun to mow down a bison, or would he just go tackle it?
Would the bison just lay down and die when it sees Sion?
I have a feeling it would, right? Like, oh man, I can't even do this. Like, he'll come over and break my neck. I'll just do it myself. Like, here, I'll get my horn stuck in the grass, and I'll just, there we go.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do think, you know, this MLB plan came out last night, and this is from Jeff Passan, I don't know how you say his last name, from ESPN. And it went through, I mean, they're basically talking about a bubble idea as well, where all 30 teams will play games in stadiums with no fans in the greater Phoenix area, which includes the Arizona Diamondbacks have a stadium there. There are 10 spring training facilities and then perhaps other nearby fields. He said players, coaching staff, other essential personnel will be sequestered at local hotels where they would live in relative isolation, travel only to and from the stadium. Apparently, people involved with the CDC and the NIH are okay with this plan. MLB has said we haven't decided this 100%. This is just something in discussion along with plenty of other solutions.
Right.
Here's what they would have to do. Among the possibilities that have been discussed, at least. They're saying they're going to implement an electronic strike zone so the plate umpire doesn't have to be right behind the catcher. No mound visits. They're going to sit in empty stands 6 feet apart instead of in a dugout. And then, okay. Yeah, I mean, it's just all like it. All of these things just go to show the extent to which you would need to modify the game. And in baseball, it's much easier to do that because players aren't typically like in close contact with one another other than the batter and the catcher. And then like if two fielders run into each other, whatever. Right. You can't do this in basketball. The players are too close together. So I mean, this plan already sounds absurd. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. It just conceptually sounds ridiculous. And they said, you know, part of the problem with this proposal is getting players on board. Because we're talking about players having to be away from their families for months at a time now.
I mean, I probably would want to watch just a single basketball game with a 6-foot rule.
That's how the Houston Rockets have been playing defense for years. So it actually wouldn't.
Right. Could you imagine Steph Curry, like, offensively?
Oh, God. Or Dame. Or Luka.
They would hit, like, 16 threes by halftime.
Yeah. That actually might be fun. You're right.
Just one game. No, but I mean, obviously that won't work for basketball. And that's part of it, right? Like you brought up the false negative earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, if it's just one guy test false negative and goes out of play and he bumps into, you know, 15 different players during that game.
Yeah.
And you know, they get you know, sweaty, they get breathy because you're running around, you're exercising.
Yeah.
So you're inhaling a lot, you're blowing out a lot of air when you're just breathing. I mean, it's it's just a recipe for success, or not success, sorry, for failure, yeah. Ultimately. I cannot come up with any idea. Again, I reiterate my feelings about the NBA and just basically commending them for trying to think outside the box. I don't see a scenario. Do they play in hazmat suits?
Right.
Just don't know. I was thinking the other day. It would, but I think we should spice it up then. Remember the Naked Gun with the biggest condoms they have on?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. That would be fun.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think in general, getting players on board with whatever is going to be tough. I think the NBA is going... Basically, like, here's what's going to happen. The NBA is going to withhold salaries to some extent more than they are right now. Because they're going to say, look, like, we're definitely going to cancel some regular season games. There's no way around it at this point. We are not playing a full 82-game season. Players are then going to have to decide, okay, am I on board with, you know, we could lose a significant chunk of salary here if they can't resume anything. Is it worth giving up X million dollars to, you know, not be away from my family for a couple months? So I think that's going to be the thing on the player side. Like, if they don't get on board with whatever the NBA proposes, they're going to lose X amount of their salary for, you know, the rest of the year.
And who can dictate it? So here's the thing. This is what is interesting to me. Like, even if you get the vast majority of players, like, in on this idea,
mm-hmm.
even if just 10% are holding out saying, nope, not going to do it, then what?
Yeah.
Can you even have functioning rosters? Like, what does the team do with that player?
It's a fair question.
Do they order him in and go, hey, you're contractually obligated during a pandemic?
Yeah. Oh, that's another tricky and fair question that teams and players would have to navigate. Because, yeah, I mean, what if Joel Embiid is the one Sixer who's like, no, my personal doctor said absolutely not. This is ridiculous. Right. We're not doing it.
Yeah.
What then?
Right. I'm pretty sure the Sixers won't think, oh, well, we'll manage without you, Joel.
Right. Well, they might have to, but yeah.
Right, but it's not like optimized circumstances, right? I mean, then you can play with what you have, I guess.
Yeah, and I would assume that would be what they would have to do, but that's obviously not ideal.
No, but nothing is at this point.
Right. Like,
whatever the solution is, it's not going to be ideal. Whatever the NBA is going to come up with, even if it succeeds in just like a major success compared to normal, like it's not going to be what we know. It's not going to be, they're not going to be recouping that money either. So, yeah. No, I mean, I think it's so tricky because, and I think some fans are forgetting that NBA players are people too.
Right.
With emotions and opinions
and,
you know, families, like you have alluded to numerous times. So they have a set of priorities just like the rest of us. And for some, maybe it's financial. For some, it may not be. Some might actually be willing to do either and just go with the flow. It you know, there are so many different personalities within the league, and we just don't know. Some might even agree to it initially, and then when they arrive and they hold out, they'll be like, you know what, I'm not doing this. I'm going home.
Yeah.
Because you have to dedicate months and months and months to this, just off the quarantine alone.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, it's tricky and it's difficult, and that's partly why I'm very, very skeptical on the season even returning in a weirder form. I don't think it's feasible.
Yeah. I mean, I think unfortunately for the players, it will be a losing PR battle if they complain about whatever solution the NBA comes up with and if they're unwilling to do so because they have to be separated from their families. Because again, like, so many people are going through, like, we can't pay rent. We don't know where our next meal is coming from. They are not going to give a single damn about millionaires having to be inconvenienced in any way. So that part I worry about from a whose side are you taking, player versus team or player versus owner. I fear the players will be on the losing side of that PR battle regardless. But it's totally fair. Like, that would be very crappy if they had to be separated. I mean, of course, they already have to be. You know, in an 82-game season, when you're on the road, you're separated from your family. That's not a huge change from usual, but you're never going to have, like, an 8-week road trip. Like, you get to go home eventually. So that will be a huge change. I do think the financial side of this is what's going to force some hands here. But then I'm looking ahead to 2020-2021 as well, because, you know, Dear Leader the other day said he thinks, like, he was pressuring the NFL to start on time, and he's saying fans are going to be in the stands by August or September. There's no way. There's just absolutely no way that we are going to be in a place in 3 or 4 months where we feel comfortable packing 15, 20,000 people in close quarters with one another, much less an NFL stadium where it's closer to 80,000. Like, unless we come up with a miracle cure, which we do not have right now. The vaccine is not happening in 3 or 4 months. Like, I wish it would, but that's just not how medicine works. You're going to have to test it and test it and test it and make sure it has no bad side effects and it actually does what it says it's going to. And then you're going to have to ramp up mass production. It could be out in a year. I hope it is, but it's not going to be out by August or September. So what we need in the meantime is we need a combination of antibody tests, which will then tell you, okay, you've had it, and now you are theoretically immune, so then you can go out and resume your day-to-day life, because you won't be at risk of catching it again, and in theory, you won't be at risk of transmitting it to anyone else. And then we'll also need some sort of therapy, you know, some drug, whether it's Dear Leader's hydroxychloroquine or remdesivir. There are a bunch of things being tested out right now. Nothing has been proven over a clinical trial to be effective. But if we find something that makes this thing significantly less fatal and that wouldn't overload hospitals and force people to be on ventilators for weeks at a time, then we could also expedite a return to normalcy. Until then, fans are definitely, like, that is the absolute last thing coming back. Sports might come back in some capacity in the next couple months. Having large groups of people gathering in one place, whether it's concerts or sports events or whatever, absolute last thing that's coming back. So I'm looking ahead to 2020 and 2021 season, because, you know, now we're talking about the NBA. For the salary cap next year, you usually use the baseline of the revenues from this past year. Well, this screwed everything up. We're going to, you know, right, we're talking about the league losing $500 million, $1 billion, whatever. If you use that as the baseline, you're going to be undercounting, potentially undercounting revenues for next season. But I'm thinking, like, well, the league's going to have to at least account for the possibility that fans aren't going to be able to attend, at least at the start of next season.
Or maybe in all of it, honestly.
Right.
This is going to stick in people's minds for years.
Yeah.
For years. Yeah. Look, if we are, you go outside to run, and I know you keep your distance.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But when you are out running, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if this has happened to you, but, you know, we go on walks.
Mm-hmm.
If we see someone on the street, even though they're, like, far away, but if we see someone just coughing or sneezing, our alarm bells just rings immediately.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't sit in a stadium of 80,000 people and have this collective agreement. Okay, nobody breathe for the next 3 hours.
Right.
Nobody sneeze, nobody cough. That's just not the way it is. Like, can you imagine an open NFL stadium in the cold, like Chicago winter, and, like, no one sneezing or coughing outside?
Right.
That's just not feasible. And look, if someone is sitting in front of the person sitting there coughing and sneezing, that person is gonna immediately think, "Oh, coronavirus, yeah. What the hell?" it's just not realistic. And it's the same. You know, we can apply this to movie theaters as well.
Mm-hmm.
Movie theaters who are struggling, you know, even before all of this, unfortunately, you know, what's gonna happen there? Right? It's
mm-hmm.
this goes so far beyond just sports, and it's large gatherings at anything, like at anything. And it's so, no, I mean, I completely agree with you. The NBA, the NFL, MLB, football in general, I mean, they're not going to have fans in the stands. If they are, it's going to be a very, very limited amount of people. Mm-hmm. And they're going to sit scattered all around, and they're not going to pull in all that money off of tickets. And that's just the reality of this situation for probably at least another year, full year, like a full calendar year. That wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. Or, like you said, until a vaccine has been produced and proven effective. And that still needs some time, even after it's come out. Like, you don't automatically go, oh, okay, now this is out, everything's going to be better. No, there's going to be a period where, okay, we're going to look at this at a large scale. Mm-hmm. Are we going to see any side effects that we didn't anticipate?
Right.
Because one thing is the testing period. The other thing is when it's released to the public and millions of people take it, sometimes things show up that you didn't expect because mm-hmm. we're still people and, you know, we can't safeguard for everything.
Right.
So, yeah. And then to make matters even more scary, like maybe the virus mutates.
Right.
That is also a thing. And hell, look, right now, a tiger effing has it.
Mm-hmm.
That is also not great news, that it can now be apparently transmitted to animals, you know?
Right.
So I just, this is why I'm being so defeated on this whole purpose. I don't see how the NBA can realistically look at this and go, hey, you know what? We have an idea.
Right.
And it's going to fix everything. No, you're going to take a financial dive for this season, next season, maybe even the season after that. This is going to be 3 years from hell.
Yeah. I mean, I understand the NBA not wanting to rule anything out right now.
Yes, yes.
Because obviously they're just saying, like, let's wait and see what happens. I mean, we had no idea where we would be a couple weeks ago, even though we did, because look at Italy. Like, this was not hard to foresee, but we can go with that logic, sure. There are signs in Italy and Spain that they have possibly, hopefully, flattened the curve. And, you know, maybe life will start to resemble some semblance of normalcy in the coming weeks there. But now there are reports coming out of China in particular that, you know, there might be a second huge outbreak there. So what happens then? If, like, we start to resemble normalcy and then there's another huge outbreak, then we shut down everything again. Or unless we have, I mean, what South Korea does, where you can contact trace and isolate on a systematic entire federal country level, which I think it's fair to say the United States probably will not have. I know Massachusetts just rolled out a pilot program like that, and hopefully it's successful, and hopefully it's something that other states can emulate. But I think it's become clear over the last month that pretty much every state is on its own here. Like, if we are looking for to the federal government for guidance, we are screwed. So hope that your state and local leadership are actually proactive here and can figure out good solutions. But I don't think that's going to be the case in every state or jurisdiction. So that is one issue. I mean, I'm hopeful that the NBA comes up with a solution that works and that's meets the guidelines from health administrators. I think that is one thing the NBA should be commended on, is that they have, since the very start of this thing, since they shut down the season, they've said, we're not coming back until it's safe. Like, we are not putting our players at risk, our team executives at risk, our fans at risk. And I think, you know, good. That should be the priority right now. We know you're losing a ton of money. $1 billion is nothing to sneeze at, but you ultimately have to realize what's important here. Like, yes, we all miss basketball, but yes, we also like being alive. And it is not worth jeopardizing your players, team, executives, fans, their livelihoods for, you know, the entertainment or even, I mean, for a lot of stadium workers, like, rely on that income. Yes, that would be great to have it all back, but right now we're just not in that spot. So hopefully they can come up with a solution. But again, I think we're a ways away from anything realistic.
Well, on that note.
Well, at least we're going to possibly have this horse tournament. That could be cool.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Can we not do like a virtual dunk contest too?
Hmm.
Like, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, that would be fun. Then I just, like, where would that happen? Like, do you just, like, I don't know, rent out a gym, you know, for each player in their own district.
Well, that, and then, I mean, some of these guys have, like, Zach LaVine clearly has a court at his house, right? Because there's the video of him playing with his dog.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds realistic.
I mean, yeah. His dog was, like, chasing him as he's dribbling, and then he crossed it over his dog, which was pretty mean. But, you know, I mean, some of these guys, not everyone, of course, but for the guys that have gyms at their home or gyms that they can, or right. It's not even gyms, but like a basketball hoop at their home.
Yeah.
Like, just enroll them and do a virtual dunk contest. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I am sure that teams wouldn't get frightened whatsoever if their star player starts dunking on an outside rim. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fair point. Well, maybe
with no medical personnel close by. Rough asphalt. Like, no. Yeah, that's. Go ahead, Zach.
Put some padding underneath. I don't know.
with the basketball hoop being on like a straight metal rod. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So if Zion participates and then the hoop comes down on him, yeah.
Yep. Yep.
This plan might not be the best.
No, I think it's fun to see like the ingenuity of them trying to pivot into something that's at least fun.
Yeah.
That is cool. Absolutely. I don't know how they're going to, you know, get money out of it, but
right. Well, I mean, I think if nothing else, this has proven that, you know, we are desperate to watch anything resembling sports. Like, I don't know what the ratings on that NBA 2K tournament were, but I know, at least based on the people I follow on Twitter, a surprising number of people watched it, or at least watched some portion of it. So I think anything involving actual NBA players doing something resembling basketball will draw gonzo ratings. And I'm sure ESPN and every other channel that's been relying on live sports is equally desperate right now. So I think the NBA has willing partners. It's just a matter of figuring out something that, again, is safe for everyone.
Well, leaning into esports is not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because obviously esports is wildly popular. There's a lot of money in it. And that is a branch of like the sporting world that can actually practice safe distancing and social distancing without it being an issue.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's just the way that it's going to be pivoted. And if that means more NBA 2K and people like that. Personally, I like to play NBA 2K instead of actually sitting there watching people playing it. But that's just me. I'm old.
Right.
I'm not the target audience. But I understand that the newer generation really finds that very interesting. And I'm all for that. That's awesome. I mean, if they have an outlet to be entertained that way, go for it. That's cool. That is good for you. And then I'll just sit my old ass down and like play the game myself without anyone watching me, I think.
Let's just have more trash talk. Regardless of what path they choose, I just need more trash talk. I just want like Joel Embiid and Hassan Whiteside to be paired off.
That would be fun. Maybe you and I should actually play a 2K game and just trash talk.
Do you have 2K13? Because that is the latest one I have.
Oh, God.
I can't. It got too complicated, man.
Too complicated to buy a game?
No, the game itself got too complicated. I played like a demo of 2K15 or 16, and it was like, it's way too much stuff to think about now.
I'll tell you as much, though. Joel Embiid is fun to play with in 2020.
Is he? Yeah. All right, maybe. I'm still. Borderlands just came out with a new downloadable content, so I'm working my way through that because I'm a single game mindset type of person. Like, I can't switch between a bunch of them. I have to just, like, I start something and I just have to finish the whole thing.
Yeah.
So after that. Feeling. Yeah.
If it's, like, narrative driven?
No, it's not even narrative. Like, I don't know. The Borderlands series, there's just something that clicks in my brain. It's like. Right. That type of game, Diablo did the same thing to me. Like, I'm all about, like, dumb, mindless point and kill.
You know what? There could be a need for that. You have no idea how sad I was to learn that The Last of Us Part 2 has been delayed.
Oh, yeah. But Final Fantasy comes out this week, right?
I think it does, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, the game podcast is what we should call ourselves right now.
Yeah, except it's just going to be like me talking about what I did in Borderlands, because that's all.
Honestly, I wouldn't even be surprised if people tune in and still listen to us because they need content. Everyone needs content these days.
That's true. Yeah, if anyone listening plays Borderlands on PlayStation, hit me up. I'm happy. I still have yet to successfully complete a Malawan takedown because I don't do the co-op thing at all yet. But I'm happy to try. All right, Mort, let's wrap up talking about the Chicago Bulls. We should preface this by saying we have a special guest lined up later this week to go more in detail on this. So we are just going to hit the basics now, and then we'll circle back on Friday because there might be more news at that point. Right. But I mean, we mentioned this during the preemptive by Felicia that the Bulls were considering making some bigger changes to their front office. Woj came out and said they have officially embarked on a formal search process to hire a new top executive with full authority on basketball decisions. So
I don't want to get in trouble with Woj again.
Okay. Uh-oh.
But I kind of feel like it, you know, for the general public, that was just made more, I don't know, well known, I guess, because it's Woj. But mm-hmm. like Casey Johnson has been on top of this since day one.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He said as much. Like, when Woj came out and more or less said, well, this is actually true. Like, yeah. Casey Johnson's been saying that for at least 3 weeks. Like,
right. Yeah. So they originally had a list including Chad Buchanan from the Pacers, Bobby Webster from the Raptors. I believe Adam Simon is the guy's name from the Heat.
Correct.
And Arturas Karnisovas from the Nuggets
right.
were their four initial candidates named. Three of them, Simon, Buchanan, Webster, said thank you but no thanks.
Or were not allowed to interview.
Right, right. They did get permission from Denver, so they're going to interview Karnisovas midweek, according to Woj. And then they also got Justin Zanuck, the assistant general manager for the Jazz. He interviewed virtually on Monday.
Is he the assistant or is he the GM? I'm seeing conflicting reports on that.
I thought he was the assistant, but I could be wrong.
The thing is, like, and we talked about this before, you know, the different structures that NBA teams have with their executives, mm-hmm. you're just not sure. I'm looking it up right now, and it says GM, so Justin Zanuck is the official GM.
Oh, okay. There we go. Oh, maybe he got... Yeah, maybe he got... Because I know he's been mentioned in a few different GM searches in recent years, so maybe they bumped him up to keep him in place.
You know what's funny? And trust me, this is not to rag on anyone, but when you actually see a picture of Justin Zanuck, he looks like a combination of Gar and Pax.
Oh, no. Maybe that's why the Bulls want him.
That's just like a visual thing, but like I found that pretty hilarious. But by all accounts, he's really good at his job. Mm-hmm. Someone dug something interesting up, though. And apparently, Zanuck interned for Mark Bartlestein.
Oh.
A Chicago-based agent with special ties to the Bulls.
Oh, there you go.
So again, it's... you know, some people are basically saying, oh, they're going the nepotism route once more.
Sure.
So I get that some people will look at that and go, of course. Of course they didn't hire entirely outside of their reach. But, yeah.
But
I think he would make a strong candidate.
Yeah, he seems to be well-respected. I don't think it's a... Yeah. Jerry Colangelo hires Brian Colangelo type thing.
Right. No, I think he's like, I'm just opening up Casey Johnson's article on it, and like he cites that Zanuck's strong reputation for communication, cap knowledge, and connections with international basketball.
Mm.
So, I mean, that is all the big major areas that a GM needs to hit on.
Yeah.
So I've heard good things as well. I mean, Woj over the recent years as well, whenever there's been a GM search, like he's always like kind of mentioned him, gone out of his own way to say, well, you know, Justin Zanuck could also be someone who's like in the pipeline for someone. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it makes sense. These are two quality candidates left on the board.
Yeah. Do you have a strong preference or are you good with either one?
I mean, if I was the Bulls, my preference was Webster, but you know, that was just not available. Mm-hmm. So between the two, I do not at this current stage. I overall just hope for the Bulls that they get someone in who is competent.
Yeah, right. And do we know, we'll ask our guests this on Friday, but do we know, I mean, we've heard that at least that Gar will be reassigned to a smaller, like, scouting role of some sort. Do we know what role Paxson is going to have in the front office after this?
That is actually interesting, because just today, Casey Johnson from NBC Chicago also just basically laid it out. He's been getting a lot of questions recently. Let me just go find it. But he had a segment where he basically said, you know, I've been asked this so many times, and the thing is, it's with John Paxson, it's all about, you know, whoever you bring in. So that means if Paxson is going to be asked to, like, take a back seat and just be like a cheerleader, mm-hmm. he's okay with that. If he's asked to take on a larger role, then he's also okay with that. It's basically just keep being employed, I guess.
Huh.
But it doesn't really matter which role.
Okay.
And as far as Gar, you know, the hire is going to get final say. Right now, he's a scout. But if someone said, you know, the hire comes in and says, you know what, I'm just not looking to get into all of that, like, because of the history and whatnot, like, then he's out of a job.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah. So this is going to be like an entirely different front office structure.
Yeah.
But we just don't really know yet what kind of role, if any, that John Paxson is going to have, because that seems to be up to the new guy.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Yeah, and
it is interesting. I don't recall an NBA situation that was, you know, like that, at least.
The Sixers were, like, not exactly like this, but when they hired Elton Brand, I think that was one of the reasons that guys like Morey and some of the other more respected executives eventually turned them down, because they were saying, like, we want to keep the people that we want to keep, like the underlings, the Colangelo underlings, right, that we had in place. So they didn't want to, like, sweep out the whole front office and give. They wanted to do their, like, three-headed Hydra BS front office thing where no one actually has power.
So that's why they went with someone who was, you know, somewhat inexperienced in that role.
Right. They wanted to probably a figurehead.
Yeah.
Which... but hey, the Knicks want him apparently. So,
I mean, the Knicks need another power forward. So why not?
By all means, if you want to trade us a second round pick, Knicks, by all means. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that particular aspect affects this search as well, because I would think that, you know, not having the current team president still lingering around might detract people from being interested in the job. Like, I would think most people want to come in and you're saying, okay, I'm going to be in charge of all basketball decisions. Well, you know, having my predecessor here just kind of like hanging around in some nebulous title or role or whatever, I don't know that does a lot in terms of making this job very attractive.
Right, and I think that's why it's sort of open.
Mm-hmm.
And by basically letting the hire dictate whatever's going to happen moving forward.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those situations where the Bulls just don't want to burn any bridges. So they're, like, they still love John Paxson.
Sure.
They really do. There is a true love there going on. And I think for them it's just, okay, you know, John, you're going to be with us in one way or the other, even if it means that you're just going to be like a glorified cheerleader. You know, it's fine because we love having you around. You may not get a say, but we hope that's okay. And then the new hire goes in and dominates everything, which most people are hoping for, obviously, because otherwise, you know, you're not going to get change.
Right.
But the shadow of him lingering around, that is definitely going to frustrate fans, I think.
Yeah.
I think fans want, you know, a complete detachment from him. Mm-hmm. Basically just say you have to be hired somewhere in Siberia to really make us feel confident in this team again.
Yeah.
Whether that becomes true or not in terms of what kind of role he's going to have and if he's going to be influential or not, we just don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
But if a report leaks out in a year saying that this new hire, whoever it ends up being, is taking advice from John Paxson and Doug Collins, you know what? I'll tell you right now, Bulls fans are going to revert back to the same amount of anger that they had 2 months ago.
Yeah. But what is the general sense among Bulls fans right now? Is there like more hope than there's been in years?
No. No.
Oh, God. No? Really?
No. Right now, it's basically everything doesn't matter unless, you know, everyone goes.
Yeah.
That's the feeling. I honestly believe you could hire Jerry West and people would be like, doesn't matter.
Wow.
Doesn't matter. Because if Pax is there and like the cronies are there and that whole nepotism circle there is still in place, then it doesn't matter. And I understand that. I truly do. I mean, that is actually a pretty reasonable response, because if anything, the past 5 to 10 years have shown us that is true.
Yeah.
There have been severe lack in judgment because of nepotism calls. And like the idea of, hey, let's get someone in from Iowa, right?
Right.
Like all the time. Like it's within their own little circles.
Yeah.
It's not how you function today. They are old and they act old, and that's not how you do NBA in 2020.
I mean, I will say, for as much as we crap on the Bulls for their front office dysfunction and their terrible coach, one, it sounds like whoever takes over will have full control over whether to retain Boylan, so that's good.
Correct.
But two, like the Bulls, I know they act like a small market team, but they're not. They are in a gigantic market. They were one of the most successful teams in NBA history. They are still living off the Jordan era, as you often point out, but like there's a reason for that. You have the greatest player of all time, you're going to live off of that for a while. So they have that allure still because of Michael, and they're going to have it forever. They have a good collection of young talent. Whether that group of players fits together and is the core of your Absolutely. Team moving forward, I don't know. I'm sure that is a question that they will be asking all of these GM candidates. It's like, what do you think about, like, is Zach LaVine a foundation point moving forward? Is Wendell Carter a foundation piece moving forward? Is Lauri Markkanen? Like, what do you do with Lauri Markkanen in the summer, as we talked about in the right. Central by Felicia pod? So, but they have, you know, those guys, Kobe White, like, they have a bunch of young talent. They'll have another lottery pick whenever this year's draft takes place.
Presumably number 7 again.
Right. Whatever it may be. But as you've said, this draft is weird, and it's going to be especially weird since teams can't bring in players to work out. So who knows? Maybe you hit a home run at number 7 again. Like, there, in terms of just raw talent, raw young talent, the Bulls are got to be within the top 5 of the league, right?
I think that's a little too high, but I do agree that they have this tendency of doing well with the young players. It's after the young players have passed like the first couple of years,
mm-hmm.
that's when it just, like, they need someone who can actually pick them up after that.
Mm-hmm.
Like they find talent, but they either wasted away or traded for less value than they should get in return.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they just don't think enough ahead, like in terms of planning. And, you know, you go back to Jimmy, who obviously was an all-star caliber player. Then you figured, oh, let's add Rondo and Wade to him, right? And then they used that as an argument for, oh, it didn't work, that means we have to trade Jimmy. Like, that logic was never sound.
Right.
And I think that was the problem. It was just this complete lack of planning, this complete lack of understanding what is required for certain players to optimize their abilities. Like, right now, you have Lauri Markkanen. Last year, he showed great signs of becoming this next 2010 guy who could even take the ball up the court and kind of sort of initiate the offense, at least for himself. Like, he had a pretty good dribble. And then this year, you use him as, like, solely a spot-up shooter, more or less, mm-hmm. which is just, like, it they don't make it easy on themselves is kind of the point. Right. And I think this is what Bulls fans are fed up with. It's the fact that they keep doing everything so damn difficult. Mm-hmm. Like, they have to take the longest road to everything all the time. Whereas the rest of the league have realized, oh, you know what? If we just do things smart, we're going to accelerate our rebuild. We're actually going to do this and this and that. We're going to be fun to watch. And the Bulls are none of those things.
Right.
It's just like I mentioned a couple years back, and I still feel this is relevant. You know, they had every level of their infrastructure just completely messed up.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in that severe position, you're going to need a lot to move that around and turn that around. And I think this is just step one.
Yeah.
Whoever they bring in needs to be given full autonomy. I mean, if it's Justin Sanek or if it's Arturas Cornizovas, like, you tell whoever of those guys, or if it's even a FERC guy, you say, you know what, this is your team. Mm-hmm. This is your team. You have full autonomy. Do you want to get rid of John Paxson and Gar Forman? Fine. Do you wish to replace the entire coaching staff and the entire medical staff and the entire training staff, or scouting staff, whatever? Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Do it. You have full authority to do whatever the hell you want as long as you establish a culture.
Yeah.
Because there's no culture right now. Yeah. It's all nepotism. Nepotism isn't a culture.
That almost worked out for the Sixers, if not for a burner Twitter scandal.
Yeah, look, if that had been the Bulls, that dude would still be employed.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I think the point is, at least, there are reasons for general manager candidates to be attracted to this job.
Right.
We will obviously... Absolutely. We'll see what happens in the days and weeks to come, but we will circle back to this discussion later this week for sure.
We're going to have like a full hour on this later on in the week. Yeah.
But we at least wanted to hit on the basics today since it's in the news, and it would be wrong of us to ignore it. But I think
it would be a waste. Yeah.
I think that is a good place for us to wrap up. So thank you as always for listening in. Hope you are staying safe out there. Keep it up. We are really starting to see signs of progress, not only in the States, but in other parts of the world as well. So this stuff is working, as frustrating as it may feel. And believe me, I work from home. This like shouldn't be this much of a departure from my day-to-day life, but even I'm starting to go a little stir crazy. So I know it's not easy, but we'll get through this together, and we will keep pumping out some NBA podcasts for you to kill an hour as you are chasing your kids around and praying for the day they can go back to school.
Which is just going to happen on the 15th for me, apparently.
Yeah.
Even though it's all right. That's funny, though. I mean, look, I would love nothing more than to actually have a break.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't want to put my kid back to school if it's not safe, of course, obviously.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a weird situation. So don't do like us and open up the country gradually. Just don't. Wait. Wait, even if the curve starts to, you know, it starts to flatten a little bit, don't. Just keep it moving and, you know, execute it properly.
We at least moved past the proposed Easter massacre. So that was a win.
There we go. Progress.
Yeah. All right. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian.